Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Commander and Coffee Podcast, where there's always something brewing. I'm Chris, a.k.a. Cypher.
I'm Bill, or Billy, a.k.a. Cork, or, yeah. I'm having an identity crisis.
I'm Y. I made my decision. I decided I'm not using my actual name.
When have you ever been called Bill?
It's my professional name, all right? All right. It's Billy. Call me Billy.
I've never known you as Bill. People say that, I go, who the hell's that?
Yeah, well, listen, sometimes you have to introduce yourself as Bill. It's better than William.
It's your PTA dad, Sona.
It literally is. I got my New Balances in the back.
If I ever need to ask you about the weather, that's what I'll refer to you as.
All right there, son.
Didn't we confirm that your name is Pumpkin Spice now? I thought we did that in the last episode.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I wanted to double check on that. Anyways, guys, today's brew is a hot one with a little kind of metallic-y aftertaste.
That's literally what you said last week.
Son of a bitch, I didn't change that line. I was changing everything else. I missed that line.
Congratulations, you've like infringed your own copyright.
I did. I literally like agonized at work going over every freaking line of this.
You're ready? I got you.
Today's coffee is poisoned.
Well, even I looked at it and I was like, metallic aftertaste. What the fuck do I care about that in the reanimation deck?
No. Today's a black one with a nice white frothing.
Today's is a brew is a hot one with a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you know.
A little bit of that.
Anyways, since I really screwed that up, we're talking about Ellis Ilkor Sadistic Pilgrim today. But before we get into that, how are you guys doing? What's going on? What's going on in our worlds this week?
In coffee news, my campus Starbucks is closed this semester. It is absolutely tragic. Everyone's really upset about it. Basically, our library has taken over the duties of making coffee for the entire student body. And it was a little bit awkward to start. They didn't have a lot of stuff going on, but I was there on campus on Monday, and they really pulled through, I think. They've got a way bigger menu now. They have, it's not like a fresh brew, but they've got like four or five different coffees to pick, including a decaf. So we'll say it's actually like 3 to 4 choices in real, you know, in reality. But yeah, like I got myself a nice medium roast, just like honestly better than a lot of the Starbucks ones I've had. It was $2 for a normal cup of coffee on campus. So I am hopeful for the future as far as my college lunch experience is concerned.
That's good. We stand those library people. We love them. They are doing us coffee lovers work.
I mean, a library is just like a community service center at this point with all the things that they do. Support your local library, everyone. But yeah, like that's absolutely a needed thing in this community.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't get enough of that. That's wholesome content right there.
I don't read.
We know you don't know how to read. It's fine, Chris. It's fine.
I don't.
We've been trying to teach you for the longest time, and it's just not working out, you know? I think we just have to accept the fact that you're just not going to be able to read. It's going to be like, you ever see Drumline? You know how Nick Cannon's character?
I accepted that fact years ago. Well, it's not reading. I know how to read. I think it's more or less speaking and typing in the English language is not my strong suit.
He plays ad nauseam. He had to learn to count before he learned to read.
Right.
One is more important than the other, clearly.
Look, give me numbers and Excel spreadsheets and everything like that, and I'm golden. Give me a Word document, and it's not my strong suit.
Do you know that episode of Jimmy Neutron where he's like learning how to use the cash register, and it's all pictures of the food on the buttons?
Yeah, so a McDonald's.
Like, I'm just imagining like resolving an ad nauseam and just like, picture, you know, like picture of two drop, picture of, yeah.
Anyways, Bill, Billiam, William,
Steve,
Jack the Ripper, Pumpkin Spice, whatever you want to be called. What's going on with you?
Oh, not too much. Just the usual stuff. Finishing up softball. I joined a bowling league. I also joined a wiffle ball league. I don't remember if I mentioned that last time, but it's interesting. It's interesting to say the least. Playing as a kid is nothing like playing as an adult. I just did an overnight tournament recently. I'm too old for that. I really should not be staying up and playing softball all night. I was not okay the next day, and it took me like 2 days to recover. But other than that, it was fun.
I don't think people appreciate the finesse of the difference between softball and wiffle ball, because when I first heard about you doing both, I'm like, what do you mean? They're the same thing.
No. There. Wiffle ball is that little white orb with the slits cut out of it, and you hit it with the yellow stick. And then softball is just filled with a bunch of crybabies because they don't get their way, who are supposed to be adults. But anyway, that's just my own personal angst with that.
I like the wiffle ball sound, like when you hit it. I love the sound of a wiffle ball. It's like the most nostalgic sound to me.
I mean, yeah, that's really why I like it. It's nostalgia. It brings back to when I was a kid playing wiffle ball in the backyard. But like the rules are different now. Like you have three fielders. I mean, well, at least maybe different than when I played it. You know, I might not have played it correctly when I was a kid because, I mean, I was a kid. I just wanted to hit the ball with my friends.
Yeah, now it's like tainted by the realities of adulthood.
Yeah, it's like you got pitcher's poison and there's only this little circle that they could stand in. And then like you only have three fielders, so you're running a lot more. And it was a lot.
So speaking of the corruption of pleasant things, Phyrexian Core Cleric.
What about Chris's day week? I mean, I know it was corrupted by like everything in this the Phyrexians, but what did he do this week?
Yeah, my week's nothing but a little metallic aftertaste at the end of it. Now you have to
that keep Phyrexian that oil.
my week.
he has too many iron supplements this week.
My week was good. It was a little busy trying to getting closer and closer to D-Day, wedding day for me. So continuing to struggle through learning all that process and getting that figured out. But it's exciting then. And then we just decided that we're probably going to try and get off of apartment life and get into the home business. So trying to go through the struggles of trying to find and or buy a house too, hopefully by the beginning of next year. So a lot going on there has just been constantly burning me at both ends, but it's been good overall. I can't really complain about it. It's all stuff that I decided I'm going to do myself. So here's where we are.
Yeah. Are you going to, I really hope you find a house with like a little streaming space for yourself, a little office, game office or like game room, or are you just going to like use an office as both? I don't know. What's your ideal house setup as far as like playing Magic is concerned?
We're definitely looking to have a space, my own little personal office. And then I want to have like a little space in like a game center and stuff like that for like board games and stuff like that, like a hangout room and stuff like that. So one of the like two living room kind of things and like an office and a couple bedrooms. And yeah.
And then Billy's room as well. Can't forget that.
That's outside.
It's fine. Listen, give me a little outhouse, doghouse. I don't care. As long as I get good internet, I'm golden. Good internet and a bathroom. That's all I need.
Just remember, just like treat your house loans like they're ritual effects. You know, you just keep chaining them together until you build up for enough of the cost.
Yeah, it's a lot though. The housing market sucks right now for those that are looking or actively looking into it. So
that might have been like the single greatest thing I think I've ever heard you say.
That actually was kind of inspiring. I was going to make
right? fun it's of like, no, face. I actually I can't. Like,
actually kind of genius.
My turn is Fidelity into Bank of America.
Wow. All right. Great episode.
Now that we've gotten to there, let's actually talk about today's brew. We are talking about Ellis Ilkor Sadistic Pilgrim, one of the brand new commanders from Dominaria United. It's a really exciting commander that I'm really excited to talk about here. It's a little different take. It's an Orzhov commander, black and white, which is not, I would say, a very popular color, I think, would be the good term for it for commander decks. So it's a really interesting take. But kind of what it is it is a white and a black 2/2. It is a Phyrexian Core Cleric. So we have become corrupted on this episode. As Pumpkin Spice Boy always says, he likes his coffee black, and that's how we're taking it today. It has Death Touch, and it has whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you get to gain a life. And whenever another creature you control dies, each opponent loses one life.
There's the relevant text.
Yes, that is very relevant to this text. So a lot of you, as we get into combos, may know that this type of text, typically on cards like Blood Artist and Zealous Conscripts and stuff like that, not Zealous Conscripts. Is it Zealous Conscripts?
No, it's Zealous Port Cutthroat.
Zealous Port Cutthroat, that's the name. I got there.
It's not zealous persecution either. No camp effect.
Being, I was like, that sounds wrong. That's a red creature. Being on the commander actually gives you an outlet in the command zone for a win con, which is really cool. So really excited to kind of get into this. So looking at the commander, some of the strengths and weaknesses of it is, number one, it comes down pretty quick. It's a 2 CMC commander, so you have access to a lot of like early commander-centric cards like Deadly Rollick and things like that early on, and it gets your game plan online pretty early. It being, like I said, a win con in the command zone when partnered with one or two other cards can easily set up a win. It is low CMC, and as we get into the deck, the secret other commander of the deck list is it is able to play with Lurrus as the companion. So Lurrus being a very powerful card we'll talk about, I'm sure, a lot in this episode. But being able to be a low CMC overall deck from a permanent side, you're able to kind of rock that as your commander. And it's able to play fast graveyard-based combos to assemble winning lines. Weaknesses, though, are it is in white-black, so it does lack a lot of like powerful rituals and like the red rituals and Dockside and things like that. And then some counter magic that blue usually gets, or like explosive green ramp spells and mana dorks and stuff like that, you're not really able to play. So you're a little more restrictive in how you can build your deck list.
This marks the third Lurrus companion option that you have in this EDH format. The other two being the Stranger Things partners, which gives you access to another two additional colors as a four color pair. And now we have Jensen Carthalion, Druid Exile from Dominaria as well, which is a five-color Lurrus deck. So Lurrus has been, you know, new commanders come out, but it always comes back to our boy. And I think it's really interesting to look at the pros and cons. And here we have, obviously, fewer colors, but having a win con in the command zone, that is hard to look away from, because I feel like a lot of the viability in modern CEDH commanders, the top tier ones are ones that give you some form of card advantage. And I don't know if you'd call it like just as good or like a sidestep or like maybe a step just below, are commanders that have a part of your win combo. And this fulfills that latter option.
Lurrus is inevitable, just like Thanos was.
Lurrus cannot snap. They have no opposable thumbs.
It's kind of funny because, like, I keep wanting to build Lurrus in the companion zone, but, like, there's, like, so many other more powerful cards to like, restrict you in not playing it, and I just never want to consider him as a commander. So, like, sometimes when you're like, yeah, he could be your commander, I'm like, I guess he could have technically been the commander for this deck, but that's boring. I want to make him a companion. I want to break him like all the other formats did.
There is, like, a cool list. It was making its rounds a while ago, like, back in Ikoria. That really my cup of tea, but like people have tried.
Yeah, it's a possibility. So anyways, the game plan of this deck, either a fast graveyard based using like Entomb, stuff like that win, or it's me. So we're going to play Fast Nas as well to kind of close out the game. This deck has two primary payoff spells, like I said earlier. It's an Ad Nauseam and Peer into the Abyss deck. Normally, if you talk to me, I'm not a big fan of Peer into the Abyss in my Ad Nauseam decks. It's a lot of mana. It's a lot of challenge to get there. I just felt that the overall density of not having backup combo lines, like you're not on Thoracle, you don't have Breach Winds and things like that, just kind of relegated to me wanting to play Peer into the Abyss more. So I've since added it as an additional kind of payoff ramp spell into the deck list. I still don't know if I'm going to keep it in full tilt, but it's definitely a powerful card in the deck, and I think the deck needs this type of card in it, specifically because of the Orzhov color scheme. When looking at this deck list too, so obviously Ad Nauseam being Ad Nauseam is just a powerful card. Generally, besides something like Peer, the CMC is kind of low, so you should be able to draw a good chunk of your deck, get 20 plus cards, hopefully is the goal, and then kind of set up an Ad Nauseam win. But that's the boring stuff. We all know how those combos work. You've probably seen it 100 times. What's the real kind of bread and butter is what we're trying to do here.
What's the meat and potatoes here?
Well, I was going to say that one, but
nah, meat and potatoes.
We're trying to assemble a graveyard-based combo. So the typical best one that we've seen for a long time, if you've been in the CDH space or the EDH space, is a deck called Razakats, which is Thrasios and Timna, and it uses Razaketh to set up what they called the Leonin Relic Warder and Animate Dead or Dance of the Dead Loop with a Blood Artist, a Corpse Knight, or a Zulaport Cutthroat, or an effect like that. Well, Ellis is that third piece of the puzzle, right? You just need the Leonin Relic Warder and the animate effect to create a loop and go off with it. The neat thing about both of those effects too, as well, is when you're playing Luris as the companion, they're both 2 CMC or less, which means they're fully castable off of Luris. So you just need to get them into your graveyard with those, with your two commanders that you always have access to on the board, and then can kind of set up the line from there. Because by putting both in the graveyard, you recast the reanimation spell, which enchantment, which brings back the Leonin, which creates a loop of just killing your opponents over and over again. So that's the basic game plan. Now, there's lots of different ways to get there, and I've built in a lot of basic pieces. So Leonin Relic Warder, Dance of the Dead, Animate Dead are two core. We unfortunately can't be on Necromancy because we want to play Luris in the command zone. So just always remember as we're going through these lines, anything that costs 3 CMC that is a permanent will not be included in this deck list because I can't play Luris in the companion zone. You can build a version if you want to where you add things like Razakethin and cut the Luris from the companion zone, put them in the 99 and do that dance. But again, this deck really focuses on playing Luris in that spot. Other combo pieces we have in there is we have something, we have Altar of the Brood as a backup to if you can't kill your opponents via life loss, which is very unlikely, or just need to, can't cast your commander due to things like Draenith Magistrate or the like. You can use something like Altar of the Brood in conjunction with Luris to kind of just keep looping those back and forth and mill your opponents out as well. We also included all three copies of the other Illis effects as well. So the Blood Artist, the Corpse Knight, and the Zul'Por Cutthroat are also in the deck to allow for that that combo to happen as well, as well as a sacrifice outlet in the form of Carrion Feeder and Viscera Seer if we need to start sacrificing some things to get some other crazy loops going there. The main reason that those loops are going is because they work in conjunction with a card called Carnival of Souls. I know, CDH All-Star card, everybody knows what it does. But what it is it's a 2-mana enchantment that whenever a creature comes into play, you lose 1 life and add a black to your mana pool. So what we're doing with that is we're comboing that in conjunction with another card called Kaya's Ghost Form, which is a black mana enchantment. It's an enchantment aura that enchants a creature or planeswalker you control. And whenever the permanent dies or is put into exile, you return that card to the battlefield under your control. So with Carnival of Souls, a Sac Outlet, a Kaya's Ghost Form, and a Luris, you can actually create a loop where you can kind of go through that and kind of kill your opponents that way by them losing a life. You lose a life, but you gain a life from the Sac effect, and then you kind of cycle through that combo there. So it's a little more fringy EDH combo-y, but I think it's cool, and it's something like I wanted to kind of highlight as different ways you can build in this deck list there. I think if you really wanted to go optimal with it, you would probably want to remove that line and just probably play a little more just cleaner, more efficient things. But it's definitely a fun little line you can do if you want to include that into there. And I think it's neat. And I think the ghost form kind of has other uses and all the cards kind of play well in and of themselves, but they do assemble this kind of like build your own combo kind of thing, which is
yeah,
neat
you could almost call it like a circus of a combo. And it really does kind of make it makes you clown on people from time to time.
I really need our listeners to do me a favor. Just go in the comments and just tell me how much you hate Billy's puns so I can make him stop officially. Like, I would, please, for me. One day, that's my dream.
You're just jealous you never made it to the Cirque du Soleil.
Also, don't go in and tell him that they like his puns because then I have to make him more. And I don't want
please. I mean, even if you tell me to stop, I'm not stopping. So the puns are coming.
You're gonna lose your vowel privileges. You're gonna be known as Bill forever if you keep it up.
Yeah, I'll take that Y right away.
Gonna take Y away? What's going on?
Yeah, nope. I'm taking both Ys out.
This is the plot of Taken 4.
Solo show. So those are roughly the combos. There's some other cards in here like Altar of Dementia that does kind of the same as a sacrifice outlet and a win con in there as well. And then the last piece is Meat Hook Massacre, which when you look at it is can be a effective removal piece if you need to. But I'm more so using it for the Blood Artist's style effect, the drain and gain effect that it happens from there.
Yeah, this one got me hooked. I really do enjoy the aristocrat vibes I do get from that.
See, I can't do it. Anyways,
I mean, it is like an aristocrat deck. I didn't say anything wrong.
It is an aristocrat deck. I was actively not going to say that, and I really wanted to for the fear of the pun. But I guess now I can openly say that yes, this is sort of my take on another common archetype that you see in competitive play, which is aristocrat.
Yeah, it can't be. It's basically aristocrats because of Lurrus. So
aristocrats, yeah. Baby. Actually, I like that one. I approve
you,
of that
thank
one.
Thank you.
That
it's also good. A really good Disney movie. So shout out aristocrats, aristocrats.
Everybody wants to be
exactly.
A cat.
Except for in the movie Cats, the live action Cats. Listen, I'm a Taylor Swift fan, but we don't like to talk about that one.
People dropping some harsh takes today.
Absolutely. Oof. Listen, live action Cats, the one that was put out where nope, Jason Derulo, Taylor Swift, all them. Yeah, no, I'm good.
The best part about having coffee during the podcast is that I can sip it instead of participating in this conversation.
I'm just trying to get this going back.
Nope. We are off the rails. You're going to have to hook me back in.
Let me think of a pun. Okay. I'm looking at the deck list. I hope of Gyarpur, we can talk about the next topic.
The next topic might be a little fragmentized, huh?
Sure. Is it removal?
It is removal.
I was going to say, I'm going to interact with this podcast and get us back on topic.
You're welcome, everybody.
Anyways, moving into interaction, we have about 15 pieces of interaction in the deck list. So obviously not being on counter spells means I kind of added a little more filler into this space here to have a little more interaction.
You got silence. You're good.
We have a lot of, we have silence, right? The big one.
Can't play Ranger Captain.
Yeah, it's true too. We have a lot of the standard stuff. You see things like silence, Swords to Plowshares, Grand Abolishers in the deck list. I am on Deadly Relic because my commander is so cheap to play and it's free interaction. We're on Dam, it's not new anymore. Wow. The new single target removal or board wipe in the deck list. We have some interaction stoppers like Dranith Magistrate. We do have some other interesting things in here. I'm not a true stacks deck because I can't play things like Rule of Law and stuff like that, nor do I want to. And I am a fast combo deck, so having things like Deafening Silence also doesn't work for me. But I did find a couple of neat pieces that I actually liked in here. So I am on Blind Obedience as a way to slow my opponents down by making their artifacts and creatures start out tapped, which really just kind of slows off their game plan. And I am on, since I am a graveyard-based deck, I can't play Rest in Peace, which I really feel is a really strong stack card in this format right now. But I did find this Ashes of the Abhorrent, which means players can't cast spells from graveyards or activate abilities of cards in graveyards. I'm not exactly casting cards from my graveyard that much. There's a few cases where I am that kind of sucks, but for the most part, I'm casting a reanimation spell to bring a creature back from the graveyard and then bringing back the creature in and out of the graveyard without casting. So I feel like I have a little more leeway to get around this card.
Yeah, the wording is specific, and it's normally the reason you don't run Ashes, but in this case, it works in your favor.
Correct. In this case, it's sort of a value piece. It does shut off the Lurrus a little bit, which is annoying, but you know there are pros and cons to there through there. The other important piece, though, which is cool, is whenever a creature dies, you gain one life. This card, in conjunction with Carnival of Souls, actually lets you do a little more play where you're losing and gaining that life kind of simultaneously in that approach. If it ever matters and comes up, that's really cool to have. I did take Defense Grid as another option. I'm a big fan of that card. I really think that card is underplayed, and I want to continue to talk through that card. Talk through people playing that card. I think it's just a great card. I am on Vanishing Verse. I think that's a really solid removal spell. What else do we have in here that's cool? March of Otherworldly Light is kind of an underplayed card. It's underplayed, but I don't think it's over. It should be more overplayed either. It's in this weird space where it's fine.
It's played.
It's like, I don't want to see too many people adding it, but I think you should consider it more often than not if it fits and you need the extra removal. So I did add that in this deck list as another way to kind of handle artifacts, enchantments, and creatures. Fragmentize is just a cheap sorcery speed way to destroy things like Rhystic Studies and things that I just need to not have in play. Hope of Gyarpur is kind of cool. It's a really neat way if there's only one or two blue players that I'm able to kind of mitigate and turn off their counter spells. So a mini Singleton Silence, which is interesting there. And then the one that I'm the most interested into seeing and playing with is engineered explosives. Typically you can get about two counters on it, but I feel like two is pretty high for what this format is, and I'm pretty comfortable with that. You can get up to three with treasures and lotus petals and different things like that. But I think getting the two easy, and then if you really wanted to work for three with this card, is an interesting extra piece of removal for a deck that, again, is really not countering or being able to interact as well as it wants to.
Don't forget too, like, you can just like play the explosives on zero, get rid of a lot of like Moxen treasures that people are setting on. So there's relevant text there too, just to, like, as a way to answer a lot of other people being ahead on board.
Yep. Yeah. This is that effective way. And it's also, like I said, it too, it's an effective counter spell to Underworld Breach. Cause if you play the breach, I'm just going to pop it and blow up the breach. So
yeah.
Neat stuff there.
Overall, this deck is like a lot of cards that never were necessarily bad, but like, when you're putting yourself in the box of white black and you're further putting yourself in that another box inside that box with being underneath companion restrictions, there's a lot of cards that I think really shine here that don't otherwise.
Oh yeah, it really, this was an interesting build for me because, like I said, like I wasn't able to put all like the, like, you, when you build outside of the colors you really play for, you play regularly, it's really interesting to have to look for and find replacements, because you can't just be like, oh yeah, I'm just going to put like Chain of Vapor in. It's like a blue answer for everything. It's fine. Like, I don't have access to that anymore, right? So I have to get creative and find new ways to kind of achieve the same results.
Yeah, I really enjoy that building restriction, so to speak, of playing out of your own comfort zone when you do things like that. Like, you don't get to see a lot of that most of the time. And then you end up finding neat interactions like the Ashes or the Carnival of Souls line when you get to build out of that space with that same mindset from previously.
Looking at card advantage, this one was a tough one for me. I thought I ended up finding a couple good ones. There's not a ton in this format. Again, I'm on Luris as the companion, so I can't really play things like Timna and try and gauge that to leverage that skill set. But I did find about five cards that I think are pretty good for this deck. First up, we have Esper Sentinel. Pretty classic card, one mana artifact creature that lets me draw a bunch of cards. So that's pretty good. You have things like Skull Clamp in the deck, which is really cool because you're able to kind of slap it onto your creatures and then utilize that to draw a bunch of cards. And when you have something like a Luris in play, you're able to constantly regrow your creatures to utilize it, and you know, being as kind of, you know, impacted with the levels of removal that you have, having that card draw in there to help draw and facilitate into that, to help remove their creatures is really potent and powerful and into the format. I'm playing Classic Bob. My mana is pretty low overall because most of my permanents are, again, you know, under 2 CMC or less. So really playing Bob to help leverage and gain some additional card advantage over the time. So Dark Confidant's just been an all-star in the deck. And then in order to continue to facilitate some other anti-graveyard shenanigans, I'm on Dothi Voidwalker, which I do consider card advantage in this deck, being able to steal opponents' tutors or steal opponents' counter spells and interaction or card draw effects has been really strong in this deck.
Yeah, Dothi really holds that unique space to be a tutor when somebody else tutors or some piece of interaction. I know recently there's been games that we've played where Dothi hinges the entire game and holding down a piece of interaction when somebody doesn't have anything. Or sometimes people just forget what's in their void zone. Hi, that's me. My name's Billy. I'm a void forgetter.
Yeah, it's been fun. Dothi is a powerful card. Black is usually challenging, but thankfully I'm in a two color deck, and it's not that hard to get the two black pips necessary to cast the card. So, looking at our tutors,
I can take this one.
Why don't you enlighten us with your tutors?
Yeah, you got that one. You're playing the really typical tutor suite that you've got. Notably, Wishclaw Talisman fits under the Luris restriction, which is sweet. Groom Tutor is pretty cool in a two-color deck. It's just a, you know, an additional tutor. It's an additional tutor that you have the open slots available, being a white-black deck, to run it. And you know, you can't run some common staples like we talked about like Ranger Captain earlier. A lot of the common three mana stack pieces, Opposition Agent, notably, you cannot run. So Grim Tutor kind of fills in that void that these newer cards are kind of leaving behind that you can't currently run. Praetor's Grasp is, I love this card in this deck because you are also on a copy of Tainted Pact. So you could realistically be on a line where you grasp their Thoracle and Tainted Pact, and you can win the game off that potentially. So, outside the usual Tutor suite, that's what you got.
I really love Praetor's Grasp. It can be a Thassa's Oracle if I need it to be. It also lets me play Dockside in this deck when I go and steal an opponent's Dockside from them. It can be Underworld Breach if I need it to be an Underworld Breach.
And with the makeup of this deck, you are running a lot of fast mana and rituals to be able to cast your Pyr and your Adnaz. Having an outlet for that mana with Grasp plus the spell you get for it, it's just another way to use some of the excess mana that you might be running into in an average game.
When you have like a Praetor's Grasp for three, and you have, like I said, that 5 to 7 mana floating after like total, and then you use three of it on the Grasp, you know, then you're left with just enough to, again, get whatever piece of interaction you need to get from your opponents, or you know, do what needs to be done. Even just turning it into another removal spell, or turning it into your own version of protection in the form of a counter spell, has just been an all-star. Card's phenomenal. Looking at the recursion pieces outside of the core combo cards, I am on Reanimate. I think Reanimate is just a really strong card. And then I am on a value Savines. I think this card's most notably seen in our circles compared with Underworld Breach, but obviously that's not in this particular list, so it has a lot of value potential behind it. I still think the card's pretty powerful for what it does. The last two cards before we get into ramp that I wanted to talk about is, I am on Children of Corliss. This is, I think, a card that I know my co-hosts, at least one of them, is very much a fan of.
I love this card.
Oh, I also do. Like, no, we're not disagreeing. No,
I love this card. I love seeing this in a lot of farm decks. You don't get to see it too often. It just makes me really excited. I was very happy when I saw this in your list, and I kind of giggled like Seth Rogen in that meme.
Yeah, I wish that I liked the other 99 cards of the decks that you would want to play this card in. It's just not, the archetype just isn't my thing, but I love the card Children of Corliss.
Yeah, so basically what Children's doing in the deck list is, it's a 1-mana 1/1 that lets me sacrifice itself to gain all the life equal to the total life I've lost this turn. So in tandem, when we talked about, like, you know, the disadvantages of things like Cavern of Souls making me lose a life to add the black to my mana pool to start kind of looping Lurrus, there's a point where you have that effect in play, and if you add something like a Children of Corliss, you can go all the way down to 1 life, spend 39 life to loop that cycle around doing something with it, sack the Children and go back up. Typically it's seen a lot with things like Ad Nauseam as well, being able to ad nause down to a very low life total and then regain all that life back, and then continue to use your payment spells and things that make you lose life in order to just keep churning through your deck and keep going.
Not to mention that if you reanimate it a second time, you gain that same amount of life twice. So if you do a big ad nause, lose 30 life, crack a Children, gain 30. If you reanimate that Children of Corliss and sack it again, well, now you're back up to, you know, 60-some, 70-some life after that.
Yeah, you'd gain an additional 30 on top of that. If you did nothing else, if you paid another 30, then you gain 60 life, and you would continue to snowball out of control with that. So I think it's a cool card. I really enjoy the card. So we're playing it here. And then the last one, it is just a beater, but it is a Sarah's Ascendant. I don't think a lot of white decks should operate without this card. Just a 1-mana 6/6 flyer that helps with lifelink is pretty strong in this format. So big fan of that card.
Who doesn't love a 6/6 beater in the air?
Looking at the mana, I have quite a few rocks in the deck. I am definitely rock based, artifact based in my mana production. Trying to, again, just snowball my mana out of control. So we have our common things: Chromox, Jeweled Lotus, Lion's Eye Diamond, Petal, Crypt, Amber, Mox Diamond, Opal. I am notably playing Blood Pet, a 1-mana black creature that can sacrifice to add a black to my mana pool later on. So I can kind of early bank mana in the early turns and then later use it for what I need to use it for, as a little bit of a singleton ritual there. I am on Weathered Wayfarer, not a common card, but I'm not a ramp deck. I'm not going to have a ton of lands all the time in play. I suspect my opponents will typically gain more than me. So being able to search my library for any land card I want, whether it be a soul land in the form of like Ancient Tomb or City of Traders, or I can go and fetch up an Aganjo if I need another piece of removal out of the deck list, or a Takanuma if I need to go through reanimation, grabbing Lake of the Dead for a super boost to my mana. So it just lets me put any of those into my hand is really powerful there. So that card has been included and has actually been performing pretty well for me. And then again, just your standard suite of artifacts. So not much new and exciting there besides the Weathered Wayfarer. You can really generate some mana pretty quickly with this deck.
Yeah, you're ramping out with your rocks out. Yes. I heard that snicker. I got the snicker.
I laughed. That one caught me off guard and I laughed. You did it. Good job.
I am happy. I'm extremely happy right now.
Show's over, everyone. We're canceled. See you later. Goodbye.
I was sitting on that one. I was waiting.
Typically, when I'm playing a lot of decks, I advocate for less lands in these turbo strategies. But because I don't have a lot of density, I am playing a little more lands than normal in order to help facilitate the Weathered Wayfarer, to make sure he has targets for when he's casting his spells, and to just kind of help me power through. I am on 29 lands. Now, that being the case, things like City of Traders will sacrifice themselves, and things like Lake of the Dead force me to sacrifice lands. I'm also on Urza's Saga. So I will still be able to trigger him pretty frequently while being able to maximize and hit my land drops. And that also helps me use this Aganjo and this Takanuma as more of a channel ability and not have to really stress so much that I need to play them as lands to make sure I hit my land drops.
Yeah, it's really feels bad moment when you have to drop it a Ganjo just to continue playing your lands as opposed to being able to use it for a removal spell.
Yeah, and then you know, like, the turn after you do that, someone's going to, like, turbo out a Chrom and hit you, and you're just going to, yeah, your world's just going to crumble around you every time.
Just sadly looks at a Ganjo sitting on the battlefield. What could have been?
So I am on a tainted mana base, and given that I'm in two colors, I am on one plains, one swamp, one snow-covered plains, and one snow-covered swamp. I feel like that's relevant. I do still want to have a good density of basics in the deck, so I did add one of each of those in order to maintain, as I believe Y mentioned, I am on Tainted Pact in order if I need to use it as a Forbidden Tutor or in conjunction with something like a Praetor's Grasp to win the game. Not to mention, you know, I am a recursion-based deck, so I have reanimate, so if somebody stops a Thoracle Wind and bins one, I can just snipe that as well and then follow up with that suit there. So definitely wanted to make sure my mana base was fit and function for something like that.
It's even a mana base fit for a Thoracle.
Other than that, that's kind of the breakdown of the deck. What do you guys think? Guys have any thoughts, opinions, questions, comments?
My biggest thing actually is in your mana base, one of them. Like the City of Traders, like I get that you're ramping out your pieces a lot earlier, but it doesn't really do anything but that. Like your mana rocks is what I'm saying. Like you get that and then it just kind of like dies off there. Is there anything like that might be a better suit that you might have seen in that spot?
I am a big proponent of City of Traders. I think the card is insane. We talk about a lot in the format, you know, things like Mana Crypt and Soul Ring are the most powerful cards. Well, that's effectively them on a land drop. Yes, when you play your second land, it does have to go away. I understand. I've read the card. But the powerful things behind it is the fact that, you know, being able to turn one a Talisman or turn one a Grim Monolith or turn one a Felwar Stone, Arcane Signet, you know, Soul Ring, Springleaf Drum, you know, so on and so forth, is just insanely powerful. Being able to deploy some Moxes and then set up, you know, like a City of Traders into, I don't know, like a Blind Obedience and something, and a Hope of Gear Purr or something like that, right? If you have like a piece of, you can generate an extra white mana there. It does a lot for what the deck list wants to be doing by being a fast and efficient way to add two mana to your mana pool. Great question.
I mean, I might as well throw in my two cents since this is a brewing podcast, right? So I just wanted to like kind of give my little perspective on things. Talking about, I mean, midway through this conversation, we were mentioning lack of counter magic, obviously black white. And we also lose, unfortunately, Ranger Captain of Eos, which I feel like is like the one that we miss the most out of all the cards that we lose from Lurrus restrictions. I feel like Ranger Captain is the one that we really wish we had, because that would otherwise get you, like, just looking at the list really quick, it would be getting you like a Viscera Seer, Esper Sentinel, the Children of Corliss, the Carrion Feeder, like a lot of your pieces that you would like to see. The question is, to replace those silence effects, I feel like you could be maybe looking at potentially Hand Disruption. I know that there's a couple mono black lists going back to the Kirk conversation, the viability of Duress and Thoughtseize. Maybe those could be a good fit for this deck as well as a consideration.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a place for them. Again, typically they're not as powerful as they are in singleton formats due to the nature that there's two other players. So you'll get one player's hand, but you won't be able to see the other player's hand. So if you're in a case where there's like one blue player, it gets a little better in that case. But if you're playing against multiple blue players, you are effectively taking a peek at one of their hands, which is pretty strong. But you can't see the other. So there's definitely a contention. The one that I was really thinking about playing was Cabal Therapy, because it also can also be a sacrifice outlet in my graveyard if I need it to be, with its flashback cost.
Cabal Therapy is a really neat idea. I mean, that's I didn't think of that one. that's I like that a lot. Especially because it lets you start your chains to do everything. So if you have something stuck on the field and you need to get it out there, you can just sack one of those creatures and use that as the starter effectively. Like if you have, for some reason, your Leona Relic Warders on the battlefield exiling, I don't know, something else, you know, that you need instead of like your Animate Dead or Dance of the Dead, you could start it that way. That's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah. Only other question I have, just looking into the near future, Unfinity, anything in there we might be looking to try out for this deck? Sawn Half's
okay. I don't know if it's how great it is in this deck. I haven't really seen anything.
Double Dark Confidant?
Yeah, I guess there's...
Double Dothy Voidwalker.
I guess there's merit to it. One of the things I wanted to mention that Billy said, which was true, was having the ability to, on Cabal Therapy, is some of the times you may find yourself in a position, and the reason I was considering the card so much and why I have some sacrifice outlets in here is you'll find you have a creature in play that you Animate Deaded, you brought back with Animate Deaded, Dance of the Dead. You can then play the Leonin Relic Order, exile the Animate Dead under the Relic Order, the creature dies, and then you can just flash back the therapy sacking the Relic Order to get that chain going. So you can use your enchantments a little more proactively to help set you up to go from there. You don't have to like wait for them to set up that specific line.
Yeah, and not only that, like you can really use the Cabal Therapy as a check. Be like, hey, Mr. Blue Player, I'm going to name Force of Will because they're tapped out and like you see what's in their graveyard and they've used the Force of Negation and, you know, Pact of Negation and Fierce Guardianship. And you're like, Force of Will, you look at their hand and it's like, oh, they have Deflecting Swat. Well, then you put it in the bin and then you sack the Relic Order and name Deflecting Swat. And you're like, haha, gotcha. So as per my request, it was to have pumpkin coffee until the end of, when did we say, October, I think it was. Yeah,
of course.
Or just your life.
At the end of my life, which could be the October. You never know. Let's hope not. But hey.
Yeah, like we don't know yet. Well, yeah, we'll check back in. Remind me 30 days from now. Is Billy still alive?
You're not allowed until after Thanksgiving. That's the rule, remember?
No, that's fine. We going out in style, boys. So I went stupid simple today, and I got Starbucks pumpkin spice cold brew. Because I've decided to go the most basic I possibly can. It was also my birthday recently, and I also got, with my pumpkin spice coffee, I was gifted a pumpkin spice candle, and it is burning in my room, and I'm in heaven right now.
Yeah, no one said on the podcast, it's not in the contract that you had to drink the coffee.
I mean, I'm drinking the coffee and drinking the smell of my room because it's pumpkin spice as well, and coffee liqueur mixed in there, so it's pretty nice. The name of it, the candle, by the way, is Slutty Pumpkin, and I died when I read it. It's so good. So yeah, that's me.
What does that have to do with the coffee?
Has coffee? I had pumpkin spice coffee, and I have a pumpkin spice candle going. I'm going super white basic mode.
All right, fair. I'll,
I don't think you really have a choice here. You're the one who issued this challenge.
That is a factual statement. I was expecting something a little more flavored than nuanced Starbucks.
Oh no! Spice. Let's go. Oh no! I decided for the first one that I was going super basic. The rest of them, however, stay tuned.
I wanted some like not non-English, like impossible to read pumpkin flavored something.
Listen, there's many more weeks. We could do this.
Do we want to engage in a coffee-related activity?
I have to go to the bathroom, so...
That is one, you could argue.
That is why. I'll be right back.
Hi.
Hello.
I got myself kind of back together. Good enough. Good enough for what we need. Okay. So, where are we... Last time on Dragon Ball Z, I was wondering if you were interested in doing a coffee-related activity.
We just did.
Yeah, but I have...
Oh, I legit thought the coffee-related activity was...
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
A fun one. A fun one that isn't, like, linked to the realities of life.
Oh. I mean, I guess so.
Cool. I am proposing a platonic Findom experience because I need to buy some coffee, and I want you to tell me what to buy.
Excuse me?
No, I will not clarify.
I no longer wish to participate in this fun coffee-related activity, because I don't know if this is going to be fun.
I have linked you in the chat to the Onyx Coffee Lab and all their coffee, and I don't know, what sounds good, because I need to buy some.
Southern Weather.
Wow, the first one, huh? I mean, it does sound good. You're not wrong.
Well, that's because I hate geometry, which is the other option. So Southern Weather it is.
Reading Southern Weather, because so for those unaware, on the Onyx coffee boxes, it gives you like a really quick kind of like four or five of the main flavor notes. Southern Weather, milk chocolate, plum, candied walnut, citrus oil, and juicy, which is the one that kind of concerns me a little bit. But the rest sound really cool. That's a good one.
I expect that for the next podcast then.
Okay. That's a good one. There's some Ethiopian ones. I don't know if it's pronounced like whoosh whoosh. I'm not sure on the pronunciation, but there's a couple of them and they sound literally all of these sound amazing. And they sound, that one's $42. Oh boy. Oh no, it's the one I like. Blackberry, compote, grapefruit, dried cherry, and chamomile.
Well, it looks like that money's going to be flying out your hand. Let's put some cards in it. How about that?
Yeah, let's do that. We're going to do opening hands now. Yeah? Let's... Billy, you're leading the charge for this one. Cypher, what are we... I mean, I think you were kind of straightforward in your overall deck summary of what we're trying to look for in the opening hand, right? We're kind of looking for a way to craft an ad nauseum or just set up combo because, like we mentioned, one of our pieces is in the command zone. So we don't necessarily need the ad nause. If we can just demonic tutor for another piece, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
So two very clear avenues that we could be pursuing in an opening hand. I guess looking for one or the other for the most part.
Yeah, you're pretty much looking for mana and tutors, right? Like that's like the best case scenario you can have from an opening hand, unless you have the rare turn one win. But other than that, like mana and tutors.
And that just plays to the strength of white-black. That's what a lot of these rituals and whatnot can do pretty well, right? Unconditional tutors and pretty strong ritual effects and, you know, cost-effective reanimation.
Are you ready to begin?
Yep. No, but yeah.
Well, you gotta pick one.
I'm never ready, but go.
That's my secret cap. I'm never ready.
Wait, I said that was my joke yesterday, yeah, you bastard.
Stole it.
The incredible sulk.
Get wrecked, nerd. All right, for hand number one, we have a mana crypt, a Bright Climb Pathway, which is the black-white flipland, a Plains, a Fragmentize, a Reanimate, a Demonic Tutor, and a Talisman of Hierarchy. I like this hand.
This hand is trash. Throw it away. Never play it. That's a joke. This hand is amazing.
He is being super facetious.
So in totality, this hand is like turn one Mana Crypt, turn one Talisman of Hierarchy, turn one
Demonic Tutor.
Pick your flavor of land. It really doesn't matter. Cast Demonic Tutor, find it ad nauseum. Next turn, play your other land, cast your ad nauseum.
And you're off to the races, because I believe when I was looking at this, the average mana cost without ad nauseum is 1.06 or something like that.
Yeah,
your total mana cost, including ad nauseum, is 109. So
you do have to live in fear, because you are on a copy of Pyr in the deck. So there is that, like, literally that one little caveat to that statement. But otherwise, yeah, you're off to the races.
All right. So we know that's a snap keep.
We finally got a busted hand.
I know.
I'm not trying to talk anyone out of this by any means. You snap keep this all day. You just have to consider that, you know, if you go turn one Demonic Tutor, I mean, everyone should know exactly what card you just got. And they're probably going to be looking at their game plan accordingly to the best of their ability. Does that make you not go for it? Absolutely not. You run it. But I just want to make you aware that, like, if this is your opening hand and you see someone, you know, play an untapped blue source and pass turn, then, you know, maybe you're trying to play around Swansong at that point if you can.
All right. So our next hand, you have a City of Brass, Engineered Explosives, Mox Opal, Lake of the Dead, Cabal Ritual, Animate Dead, and a Mox Amber.
I think this hand is pee pee poo poo.
I agree. I do not like this hand at all. You could Cabal Ritual. Yay.
How? Oh, I guess you have to play Explosives on zero, Opal, Amber, and then you get two mana.
You actually do get your commander out on turn one, but that's about the most exciting thing this hand does.
I do. Yeah, it's really cute that you get to, like, drop Explosives to activate Mox Opal here. So, like, you do generate, like, a good amount of mana here, and you could potentially just, like, get your Lurrus in hand even pretty cleanly. You lack things to do with that mana afterward, right?
You run out of gas. You're really living off the top of your library, because your commander does not at all facilitate card advantage.
All right, so we're all in agreement here. This is definitely a ship. Yep. And next hand, second seven. Windswept Heath, Gemstone Caverns, Scrubland, Plains, Skullclamp, Blind Obedience, Mox Opal. It's back.
I know. I said the last hand was pretty bad. This hand's worse.
I wish your commander had one toughness.
Yeah, that would be great.
You make so much mana. Like, you could realistically, like, if your commander did have one toughness, you could realistically be on the game plan of, like, I'm gonna dish it to Skullclamp twice and draw four cards. But that is not the life we live, unfortunately.
Can you imagine if you had a Roger here?
I think, yeah, Roger. In my opinion, Roger would make this hand keepable.
All right, going down to six. Spire of Industry, Arid Mesa, Lake of the Dead, Praetor's Grasp, Grand Abolisher, Lion's Eye Diamond, Leonor Relic Warder.
I got the line.
This one's closed.
Nope, snap keep.
One of the powerful things with this hand is you have the Relic Warder in hand, and you have the LED, so you have a clean way to have a discard outlet in discard the Relic Warder to get it into your graveyard for reanimation. So, like, if there's a chance that they're on the Praetor's Grasp can go and get you, like, an Animate Dead or something like that, can kind of help a little bit there. But you can also go and get, like, a Breach potentially with this, which could be kind of good. I don't know. There's a lot of potential here. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing it, but I don't see where this hand is solid.
Hey, Billy, could you, whatever, not do that?
I thought I was muted.
Thanks.
I literally thought I was muted the entire time.
Yeah, no, you weren't.
But, yeah, grasping an enemy dead is a really cool line that you get to do here, right? Potentially?
Well, you'd have to grasp a tutor. You couldn't grasp an animate dead.
Oh, right.
Because then they would control the animate dead when it came back into play.
Dang. Yeah, so grasping a tutor, sure. I'm also seeing a line where you can grasp someone's ad nauseum because you're casting that from exile and not your hand, so you can LED to cast that ad nauseum.
Yeah, the problem is you have the Arid Mesa to go and get, you know, a scrub land to get your Lake of the Dead online, but the Spire of Industry not being a swamp is kind of problematic, right?
Yeah, the Spire of Industry not have, like, ugh, that hurts. That hurts
a lot. You have to draw a second swamp. If you draw a second swamp, then yeah, you can absolutely. I think you're still a mana short though, right? Or no, because you don't have to. You can sacrifice a tap swamp. So that makes you have more than enough there to go off then.
You definitely would like to see some more like literally a dark ritual or anything that like ramps you up a little bit more that isn't the LED. That being said, I feel like this hand works a little bit more than it doesn't work. So is this a 7 or a 6 that we're looking at?
This is a 6.
I think I would keep this. I think I would ship it on 7, but as a 6 card hand, I'm probably staying at 6.
Yeah, actually, if this is 6, I would probably keep this. The question is do I put back? What do I put back? It's probably Abolisher. I think that's probably the right one.
LED being able to cast the thing you grasp is really interesting here. Especially because the color fixes, right? Like, you could LED for a Dockside, you could LED for, like, a Thoracle, you could LED out an Adnaz. I don't know. Any single color thing that you grab is just, like, really good, huh?
Mm-hmm.
What else is good in single color that you can grasp? A three mana, one color, disgustingly good thing you can get. A Blood Moon, even. Like, that's a world that you could be in.
Let's go to our next hand. In this hand, we have Dance of the Dead, the Meat Hook Massacre, Entomb, Skull Clamp, Urborg, and Iganjo, Seat of the Empire. Right away, I really like this hand.
Yeah, this hand wins.
You want some fast mana, right? But like, you're not going to say no to this.
Well, this is a turn 3 win.
Yep. This is a turn 3 win on two different ways.
Yeah, because you go land Entomb, put the Leonin in the graveyard. Then you go land Meat Hook Massacre. Then you untap, or you play your commander,
Yeah.
And then
did you have double black? I don't know if you had double black.
You had an Urborg.
Oh, Urborg. Okay, I missed that.
You had a Gunjo Plains and Urborg, so you actually had two scrub lands basically in that hand.
Yeah, I didn't listen, and instead I'm like, I'm just going to look at the hand, and then I realized that the window was very small, and I really couldn't do the looking at the hand.
Yeah, and not only that, it also apparently shifted like when I shifted windows. So yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, we're already looking at the next hand. We have spoilers.
So with that spoiler inbound, our next hand, Iganjo, Gemstone Caverns, Altered Dementia, Calling the Weak, Blood Pet, Dark Confidant, and Peer in the Abyss. I am very medium on this hand.
I'm trying to think of how close. I'm just looking at how much mana we make here, right, to cast Pier, because you have a Culling the Weak. That's like, that's a +3. That's very significant.
So before you go digging, unless that gemstone is coming into play with a luck counter on it, you can't make black mana right now.
I'm going to say that it is. There's a 75% chance that Gemstone Cavern is active.
If the gemstone's active, let me think. You can go Gemstone, Pitch Altar, play a Gunjo, cast Blood Pet, pass the turn. Untap.
Or Dark Confidant.
I'd probably want to play the Blood Pet, though, if you're trying to cast Pier quicker. I guess either way doesn't matter, right?
You make more mana using Culling than sacking a Blood Pet either way. So Dark Confidant, you get to see an extra card, and then you could Culling the Dark Confidant. It's all the same. You're just like using your mana more effectively and looking at
Culling and Dark Confidant don't get you there. You're still short.
Yeah, it gets you so close.
You'd have to go turn 1 Dark Confidant, turn 2 Blood Pet, and then turn 3 Ice. I think you have enough here. 1, 2. So 3, 4, 5, 6. No, you have 6. You only have 6.
You are one off. I was waiting for you to do the math.
Sorry. You got 6.
I'm gonna just believe in the deck. I'm gonna believe in the quality of the deck and say that you land a Dark Confidant and you just need to like dig to any mana positive anything, including land.
All right. So just to crush your dreams, like when you found out Santa wasn't real, I'm gonna draw 2 here.
Wait, what?
Boom. We got an Adnaz, which is actually infinitely better.
I was like, yeah, we just win now.
Instead of counting up to Pier, we just counted down with Adnaz. Perfect.
Turns out Santa is real.
Turn 1 Dark Confidant. Actually, no, you just turn 1 Adnaz. What am I doing?
Wait, no, it's, yeah, no. Oh, yeah, that would be our turn 1. Yeah.
No, you can't turn 1.
No,
you can't
it's turn still one. Turn 2. Get out.
We have to manage our expectations.
I get excited. I saw the Blood Pet. I saw the Culling, and I was like, that makes 5, but that doesn't work. Never mind.
I believed in you. All right. We ran through these fast. I mean, I know I'm going to say it so you don't have to. Let's run another one. One more for the road.
Alrighty then.
Put this last one in the travel mug so we can take it with us.
Alright, sounds good to me. This one's mediocre at best, but I'm going to keep it. Alright, this next hand has an Urborg, a Snow-Covered Plains, a Windswept Heath, a Swords to Plowshares, a Reanimate, a Dothy Voidwalker, and last on our list, Blood Pet.
To quote a very wise sage, this hand's mediocre at best, but I'll keep it.
It's very medium. It's not even medium plus.
No, the hand's okay. Like, you're not going fast with this hand. You have the Urborg, so you can have the swords up on turn one, or cast the Blood Pet if you want to, and have Dothy Voidwalker on two. So you do have some options there to use to your advantage. And unfortunately, swords and reanimate don't mesh too well together. But yeah.
Why?
Why don't they mesh well together? Because one says remove from the game and the other reanimates from a graveyard.
No. I was our other host, you know, why?
I mean, I don't really know what to build off of on that conversation. I think this is like one of the hands that like you read the cards and it kind of just like paints its own picture for you, right? Like you're not trying to do anything weird. You're able to cast the Blood Pet on turn one. You're able to cast the Dothy on turn two. And then you're able to hold up swords on turn three. That's your plan. Unless someone does like a fast commander, then you're swordsing it. But yeah.
Listen, not all of us could be a blood artist here. Yeah, the silence. I love it. That's what I'm here for. Mm-hmm. That's what I aim
for. All right,
for.
Well, I think that is a wrap. Thank you guys so much for watching. As a reminder, all links to the list will be in the show notes below. And while you're there, be sure to follow us on all of our social media platforms as well. So with this other fun-filled, exciting episode today, I'm Chris, a.k.a. Cypher.
I'm Y. I won't a.k.a. anything. That's who I am.
And I'm Y, a.k.a. Billy, a.k.a. Course.
Did you say you're why?
you're Bill now.
If you've not listened to the top of the show, you're Bill Pumpkin Spice Boy. That's your new name.
Yeah, that's right. You know what the thing I am definitely? And that's out of coffee. Have a good night, everyone.